are you? Who are you? Answer! Answer! Answer!
There have always been the dreams. Always the dreams. I don't remember how long I've been having them. Years, it seems. Decades, perhaps. They start with the same voices. Chilling, inhuman, almost pure evil. Those voices end in the same heart-rending sound of destruction, as though the universe is tearing itself apart. Then I see a fragment of something elusive, an action, a face. And I wake up with a cry. The dreams have been getting more lucid recently. I've been seeing more of the faces, the actions. And I think I finally have something coherent, which is why I've come to you, Counselor. I have an eidetic memory, clarity, precision, almost reality. Imagine dreaming of monsters when you have a gift such as mine. Now, you may ask why someone with a photographic memory couldn't, up until now, remember more than isolated scraps. My theory is that something is blocking me. I feel like I'm an archaeologist of my own history, discovering new pieces every night. Perhaps I've come to you looking for a Rosetta Stone. I am in the dream, but younger. It seems like another Zoe Harriet, in another life. Shall I show you where I've got to? Shall I introduce you to the Doctor? Last night's dream was the clearest yet. I was in the TARDIS with the Doctor and Jamie. Now, these two people I met once when I was working on the wheel and an army of cyborgs invaded. I remember clearly that we parted company when that was taken care of. I have no recollection that the events I'm about to describe took place in real life at all, though they seem real enough in the dream. The Doctor is a small man, with mopped-up hair, a funny, well-worn face, and a very shabby dress sense. I've no idea where he's from. He is mysterious and wise, serious and frivolous, mature and silly all at the same time. Jamie's a young man in a kilt. He's got a kind, blunt face. Although he's a brave man, he's the sort that, deep down, you feel like protecting. I'm more intelligent than he is. Oh, I don't mean that with any disrespect. It's just a statement of fact. So if the Doctor and Jamie left without me in real life, how is it possible that I'm with them in the TARDIS? According to my dream, I stowed away in a travelling case and the Doctor found me. When I asked to join his adventures, he tried to dissuade me at first. Using something called a thought scanner, he showed me his last encounter with his greatest enemies.
Who are you? Who are you? Answer!
Those voices, the ones I've been dreaming of all this time, now they had a name. Daleks. Oh, I was terrified, and I told him so. The Doctor calmed me down. He said, "Oh, my giddy aunt, I shouldn't have shown you that if I'd known you were going to make such a to-do." But I really was afraid. These things, metal, deadly, seemingly unstoppable, except, of course, that the Doctor has apparently stopped them. Still, I should think that fear is quite a rational response on first encountering a Dalek. "Did you not just see?" the Doctor tried to calm me. I personally witnessed their final end. You have nothing to fear from the Daleks, because there are no Daleks. We will meet many unlovable creatures and perilous situations on our travels, Zoe. But we won't encounter the Daleks. Not anymore.
I can come with you then, I asked.
Oh, very well, he said. I suppose we could do with another genius in the TARDIS. What do you say, Jamie?
I suppose I...
Jamie sounded unimpressed. And soon we were underway, though I have no idea where. When we stopped, the doctor opened the doors.
We've arrived on an asteroid, he exclaimed. But it looked as though we'd landed in the middle of a great bustling city.
Overhead there was a transparent domed shield, which covered the city, and through which you could see the stars. Rockets were arriving and leaving, bursting through the dome's membrane, without breaking its surface tension.
I thought you said this was an asteroid, Jamie grumbled.
Well, obviously, I replied, this is an asteroid that has a city built in one of its craters, covered by a protective dome.
Now, the doctor chided. You're both right. I did say it was an asteroid, Jamie. And yes, Zoe, it has a city built in one of its craters. But apart from that, I haven't the faintest idea where we are.
Let's go exploring, shall we? We left the TARDIS behind and headed off along a thoroughfare. Hundreds of people rushed to and fro. Carriages zipped along the monorail overhead, and ceramic buildings clawed at the sky beneath the dome. I was fascinated. Up ahead there was a market, with sellers busy at metal-covered stalls hawking their wares. Behind this, on the face of one of the buildings, a giant screen displayed a news channel. We went up to a market stall where a blue-skinned trader with four arms, eight eyes, and two mouths was selling some sort of fish. The smell wasn't a fish, though. It was of cinnamon. Perhaps this was a spice or a species I hadn't encountered before. Cinnamon fish.
Ah, hello. The doctor approached the trader. Can you tell us where we are?
As I mentioned, the trader had two mouths. They both answered simultaneously.
What do you mean, where we are? The first mouth grumbled. Haven't you been watching the news?
He pointed at the enormous screen on the side of the building. There was an image of this very asteroid viewed from space. You could see the blister-like dome on the side of the rock. Over this, the newscaster spoke.
And later today, asteroid Livonia welcomes delegates to the peace talks between the Xantha Empire and the Tibari Republic.
Peace talks, the doctor mused.
The broadcast continued as we walked. Asteroid Livonia was chosen because we're a neutral city. For years, we've been an oasis of calm in the midst of this terrible conflict.
Who are the Xantha? I asked. Who, for that matter, are the Tibari? The doctor had not heard of either race, and that surprised me.
I thought you knew everything.
He was practical in his humility. If I knew everything, Zoe, what would be left to discover?
Come along.
But where? Jamie asked.
This way, the doctor said. Let's see if we can find out more about these peace talks.
As we got closer, the news broadcast changed to split-screen captioned images of the two leaders. The Xantha looked human. The Tibari was a sort of amphibian humanoid that looked like it had evolved from something resembling a red snapper. The voice continued.
The Tibari, our amphibian friends, have had a more or less peaceful society for millennia. 50 years ago, the Xantha, an offshoot of an Earth colony, began to expand with their new space rockets. They ruthlessly invaded Tibari Prime. The brave Tibari fought the aggressors and have finally brought them to the conference table.
Then, quite without warning, an air car dropped from the sky and landed right in front of us. It hovered inches from the ground. Four armed and uniformed humanoids disembarked and aimed their firearms at us.
You are under arrest, their captain bellowed. On what charge? The doctor demanded, incensed but dignified. Livonia Police, the captain growled. I arrest you for fouling the pavement.
pavement? The doctor almost choked. That charge is with... Well, it's inappropriate.
You're coming with us, one of the others said.
Don't be ridiculous, the doctor told him. You're not police. You look like those Xantha on that news screen.
Be very quiet, the captain warned, or this gun will get very noisy.
Since you insist on putting it so eloquently, the doctor said.
This way.
The soldiers bundled us into their air car, and we rose into the sky.
You're Xantha, the doctor repeated. The captain glared. We've been watching you ever since you arrived. I mean, who turns up on an asteroid without using the spaceport and expects not to be noticed?
That sounds about right, the doctor agreed. Now, aren't you going to tell us what's going on?
We're nearly there, the captain announced. Atrakar can tell you himself.
Ah, the doctor said. Atrakar.
You know him?
The captain seemed genuinely curious.
Know him? Why, my good fellow, I've never even heard of him.
You'll soon wish it had stayed that way, the captain sneered.
I see, the doctor replied. It's like that, is it? Oh, dear.
We're here, one of the other soldiers called out. The air car stopped and the hatch opened. Light poured in.
Everybody out, the captain ordered.
We stepped out into what looked like a hangar bay with a very large door, and we walked to the exit.
You're right, the captain said. We are Xantha.
Then why are you doing this? The doctor asked.
We're irregulars, one of the others piped up. Very irregulars.
Very irregular indeed, the doctor agreed.
Now where are you taking us?
Atrakar, the captain said. He's also very irregular.
And he wants to mess with your heads.
The soldiers escorted us down a corridor to another very large room. It was subterranean. This was obviously some sort of laboratory. Against the far wall were a bank of instruments, computers, dials, spools of information storage tapes, and a large drinks dispenser. In the middle of the floor, a grey metal pedestal stood about 5 feet tall, with a golden orb suspended above it, defying gravity. Two long, low tables, bedecked with instrumentation, stood beside this. A rack of hyposyringes was attached to the pedestal. A man in a long blue robe watched us from beside the pedestal. But this was no ordinary man. He was Tibari, his face rather flat, almost fish-like, with a wide mouth, big, sharp teeth, and large, staring eyes. The vestiges of gills slit a grill each side of his neck. Welcome, the strange man hissed, to the future.
Been there, done that, I'm afraid, the doctor said. And who might you be?
I am Professor Atrakar. You are my subjects.
What makes us so fascinating a study? The doctor asked.
When you arrived, your life signs were detected by the mind projector, Atrakar informed us. His voice was deceptively pleasant, but had a harsh edge. The projector tells us that two of you have possibly the finest minds I've ever had the pleasure to place under surveillance.
Why, thank you, probably, the doctor said.
Although, Atrakar continued, it's not much of a pleasure to meet a mind even greater than one's own.
I wouldn't know, the doctor told him, but I'm sure you can tell me what it's like.
You have a sense of humour, Atrakar observed. Good. You will need it. Now we've not decided which of your minds are the two we want.
I bet it's the two of you, Jamie sounded grumpy. I'm not stupid, but my brain's not exactly...
Thank you, Jamie, the doctor said.
So it is you two, Atrakar smiled at the doctor and me. Identify yourselves.
I am the doctor. This is Jamie and this is Zoe, the doctor said. And you are Tibari.
Tell me, what are you doing with these Xantha? I have a vision for my people that their president has not the courage to pursue.
Oh, really? The doctor asked.
And you'll use this mind projector to pursue this vision, will you?
This is the future, Atrica declared, indicating the golden orb suspended in the air. It's very advanced.
But how does it work? The doctor wanted to know.
Atrica opened a panel. This little beauty, he said, is a very rare piece of technology. Inside the panel was a crystal.
But it can't be. That looks like it was produced by Dalek technology, the doctor said.
Daleks? I was horrified.
It is a Dalek crystal, the doctor exclaimed. He stepped forward, and the soldiers didn't try to stop him. How did you get it?
The Daleks were destroyed. I saw it. I was there.
I stared at him in dismay.
Doctor, you said there were no Daleks.
What are you talking about? Atrica demanded. Of course there are Daleks.
Oh, no, the doctor whispered, greatly perturbed. We must have arrived at an earlier time in Dalek history, or else the Daleks survived after all.
I don't believe it, I said.
I'm sorry, Zoe, the doctor looked sadly at me.
Take them! The soldiers moved on us, their guns held high. Perplexed and confused, I retreated, but the captain grabbed me and threw me down on one of the tables beside the pedestal. He stood over me, not even aiming his gun. The contempt! Another soldier manhandled Jamie and brought him over to the large bank of computers some feet away from the wall.
If you are in league with the Daleks, the doctor warned our captor, I can see only one future for you. But don't worry, it'll be over before you know it.
Daleks understand only killing and destruction,
which makes them the perfect allies, Atrica said.
I and this cabal of subversives will use the Daleks to take over the Xantha worlds and the Tabari homeworld. Then we will build the greatest empire ever seen, dividing the galaxy into those who are with us and those who are dead. The doctor replied, The only thing the Daleks want to divide is you from reality. But you seem to have managed that quite well on your own. You and your four Xantha subversives.
You should know this, Atrica hissed. With the mind projector, I can change reality.
The mind projector found that one of you has an eidetic memory. It's you, isn't it? I sat up and demanded, What's going to happen to me?
Atrica smiled darkly. You are to become an assassin. Under my control, you will kill the Tabari president, Ram Vendel, and thereby destroy these peace talks. When war breaks out again, the Daleks and I will move in and take over. It's very simple.
You can't do that, I said.
Atrica was unable to keep the pride from his tone. The mind projector uses a psychic crystal, mined on a Dalek slave colony. That crystal will transmit your consciousness encased in a physical avatar created through quantum entanglement. It will project you onto the Tabari president's flagship. When the time is right, I will send you a weapon and a code word to activate your mission. You'd never get near her otherwise. Through the projector, I will control you absolutely.
Why are you telling me this? I asked.
To carry out your mission, your mind must understand it, Atrica said. The information, once embedded in your consciousness, primes it to be receptive. After you've completed your task, I will withdraw your mind and the avatar will disappear. There will be no trace, nothing to prove that you were ever there, nothing to link you to us. The Tabari will blame the Xantha. When we come to destroying actual planets, the principle will be the same, but we will operate on an accelerated scale, projecting a single agent onto 100 worlds simultaneously, one splintered mind piloting 100 avatars.
Just imagine! We could send him into those planets' atomic command centers and threaten to launch all the rockets unless they join our new empire. I think we will use your mind for that, Doctor. Unfortunately, it's unlikely to survive that mission. But we'll start with you, Zoe. The Daleks want something simple at first, to prove that the device works. It's like the physical perfection of astral travel, I said, fascinated at the science of it all, while being horrified at the implications. But that's fantastic. On the contrary, it's very real, Atrakar said. Like all Tibari, I have a small degree of psi power, which is how I can control you through the projector. If you're so psychic, the doctor asked, why do you need us? A mind is a terrible thing to waste, Atrakar replied. Why risk my own when two perfectly fine specimens have just walked into my laboratory? Who are you fighting? The doctor was furious now. Your people are on the verge of peace, and you want to destroy it. I was once a hero to my people, Atrakar said. Ram Vendel and I fought side by side in the resistance, but when she became president, I was left to find my own way to power. Nobody remembers who came second. Haven't you heard of running for office? The doctor said. Democracy takes too long, Atrakar snapped. The only way to wield real power is to unite the galaxy under an iron fist. You're not even wearing a velvet glove, the doctor observed. At the very least, that's a sartorial lapse. You're not right in the head, Jamie said. I know your type. Speaking of sartorial lapses, be quiet, skirt boy. I'll give you, skirt boy, Jamie cried. Atrakar ignored him. Take the girl. The captain took my wrists and held me. Zoe, the doctor called out and rushed over to rescue me, but the two soldiers grabbed him. Doctor, I protested. You can't let him use it. It's horrible. Oh, my word, the doctor shouted, panicked. You must fight him, Zoe. Silence him, Atrakar said. One of the soldiers put his gun to the doctor's head. Don't worry, doctor, she will not be harmed, Atrakar continued. Not physically. She will be under my control. She will hear my voice. She will see every place connected to this projector and know that we are watching her. She will carry out my instructions. No, I screamed. Atrakar brandished a hypo syringe. I could see it was one that had no needle, but delivered its contents subcutaneously through instant osmosis. This contains a microscopic receptor chip, Atrakar said. I will inject this into your brain. Your consciousness will be placed inside the projector to be directed through the Dalek crystal. Atrakar came closer. Curiously, he smelt faintly of cinnamon, just like the fish in the marketplace. He leant in and put the syringe to my left temple. Then I felt myself falling out of my body and into the deepest dark. I woke from the blackness to find myself on a spaceship. There was a porthole through which I could see the stars. I'd fallen through one layer of reality into a deeper one, down the rabbit hole. The scene before me was still resolving itself as my mind adjusted to what was essentially a controlled out-of-body experience. I knew that my mind was no longer inside the laboratory, yet I sensed a link to my body. It was still there, lying on the table, alive but insensible to the physical world. I was in a storage room, and the door was open. This experience felt very real to me, as though I was still in corporeal form. The avatar was an exact replica that would vanish once the quantum entanglement was switched off. It took a minute or two for me to get my bearings, then I saw something unusual, or rather even more unusual. I saw the laboratory superimposed visually over this place, like a double exposure. Atrakar had already opened his channel into my mind. I saw that on the pedestal underneath the orb, a viewing screen had been activated. The mind projector could show him what was going on inside my head. It reminded me of the doctor's thought scanner, but I realized that this was something else. A wormhole between the mind projector and my consciousness, a fractured world into which Atricar could reach and control me. Somehow, I was to assassinate the Tibari president. That thought was repugnant to me. I told myself as I stood up that I must not be allowed to succeed. Atricar's voice rang out. "Zoe," it said. "Zoe, can you hear me?" To my surprise, it hung in the air visually as well. Apparently physical words floating in front of me as I heard the sound, like synesthesia. This was probably a side effect of the projector. I looked at the open door and the corridor beyond, narrow and brightly lit. Could I escape? "Raise your right arm," Atricar commanded. I struggled against his control, but my right arm moved all on its own. I could not resist. This terrified me the most, for I began to see what he could do with me. "Doctor," I said, "if you can hear me, doctor, help me!" Then everything changed. The image of the laboratory was supplanted immediately by that of another room, dark and with six lights in it. Two of the lights flashed in time to a cold, mechanical voice.
"Subject has identified the doctor. The doctor has been located. Sub-basement 54 laboratory. Apprehend and exterminate!"
"Doctor!" I tried to warn him. "The Daleks are here!" But I didn't know if he could hear me. The vision ended and I was left alone in the room for several minutes. Then, oddly calming, Atricus's voice said, "Now, Zoe, I want you to walk. Forward." I walked, because I found I could not help myself. I walked out into the corridor, not knowing what horrors awaited me. "Halt!" came the answer, a gruff voice behind me. I turned to see two amphibian humanoids in the fatigues of the Tibari army. They carried pulse rifles. "What are you doing here?" the first Tibari soldier asked, aiming his gun at me. I froze. The first soldier frisked me for weapons. Obviously, I did not have one. Not yet, anyway. That was clever of Atricar. "She's clean," the soldier confirmed. "Come with us," the other one said. Then he spoke into his wrist communicator. "Madam President, we have your stowaway." "Stowaway," I sighed. "Not again." "Looks like a Xantha, Madam President," the soldier said. "But the life signs detector indicates she's human." A female voice responded. "Human? Bring her to me. I've never seen a human before." "Move," the second soldier said. I walked between them as they took me to an elevator. We got in and the doors closed. The first soldier's name tag read Erebon. He pressed a button and the elevator began to move. Atricus's voice intruded, and by their lack of reaction it was obvious that these two soldiers could not hear it. "Tell them you're a refugee." So I spoke. "Maybe I can tell you about myself. I'm a refugee." "Where from?" Erebon sounded indifferent. "Barrier Colony 9, Atricar's voice said. There was a battle. "Barrier Colony 9, I repeated. "I was caught up in the fighting." "We were there weeks ago," the other soldier said. By his name tag, he was called Murkar. "How did you get on this ship?"
"I stowed away in a cargo container," I improvised.
"Well, this is your big day," Erebon said. "The president is curious." "Foolhardy, I'd say."
The elevator stopped, and we entered a minimally decorated room in which the president, a tall woman, similar in physique to these soldiers, sat behind a desk. She wore long white flowing robes.
"Watch her," she said.
"If she tries anything, stun her."
Then she spoke to me.
"Just a precaution, you understand. I'm Ram Vendel. What may I call you?"
"My name is Zoe, Madam President."
"You're human," said Ram Vendel. "How interesting. I've never met a human, but our science academy has discovered much about Earth. Back in the mists of time, some rather inconvenient aliens transplanted our ancestors from the oceans of your world and brought them to the place we now know as Tibari Prime. We evolved a little differently from you."
"I have no gills," I agreed.
Nobody's perfect, Rambendel said.
She was on Barrier 9, Madam President, Erebon said.
Oh? The President was intrigued.
My survey ship dropped me there to do some independent research. It was unfortunate for me that the battle broke out.
Unfortunate is too small a word, President said, for what happened there.
At least now we have a chance at peace. I will do everything in my power to see that these talks succeed.
Oh, you must, I said. It's more important than you know.
Indeed, the President agreed. It has always struck me as tragic that we and the Xantha both originated on the same world, yet we were at war. We will be arriving soon at asteroid Livonia, where I hope we can end this conflict for good. I tried to overcome Atrika's influence and blurt out a warning about the Daleks, but I felt a searing pain jolt through my mind, and I collapsed. As I fell, Atrika's voice thundered.
Do not attempt to betray me. I have your consciousness in my hands. I can crush it with a thought.
The soldiers rushed to haul me back to my feet. The President said, Poor girl, you must be starving. How did you survive?
She walked out from behind her desk and took a good look at me.
You and I have a lot in common. I was also a refugee once when I was young.
I was an astrophysicist, I blurted, for something to say. But this turned into a conversation as President Vendel replied,
An astrophysicist?
I was always fascinated by the stars. Even now, when we're able to travel among them, they've lost none of their allure. For me, at least.
We talked a little about stars and their study. All I wanted to do was to keep us talking, so that Atrika might not have a chance to get a word in. The code word.
Remember, Rambendel said, when you only ever thought of the stars as mythical creatures. Did you have that on your planet?
Yes, I replied.
We named ours after various gods and fables.
We did too. But even when you know what they are, the poetry remains, I find, if you're open to it.
Although she did not have a human face, I saw that her expression was gentle, but suffused with a weariness born of struggle.
You and the Xantha must form an alliance, I said out of nowhere, so as to catch Atrika on the hop.
There is a far greater enemy than either of you.
What's that? The President asked.
A sudden lance of pain from Atrika, much stronger this time, made me double over, sick to the stomach. It was a psychic spear of agony, retaliation for my attempted warning.
That, he growled, was your last chance.
President Vendel herself rushed over and cradled me in her arms.
Are you all right? She asked. That's twice you've fallen over.
You're obviously unwell. President Vendel was concerned. I can also see that you're an intelligent young woman. However, I have work to do now, and I have to ask Erebon to put you under guard until the talks are over. You will be well looked after on my personal orders.
Erebon, see that Zoe gets proper food and attention.
Yes, Madam President, Erebon said.
Atrika's voice intruded. I trust you are duly chastened.
You will make your move when the time comes, not now. The weapon will soon be fully charged with your psychic energy.
The thought of it made me feel ill. How was I to assassinate this woman and destroy the peace? I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. But Atrika had control of my mind.
We will speak again, the President said. I look forward to it.
Thank you, I said.
It is a very good idea to lock me up.
Oh? The President was surprised.
It's logical, I smiled brightly.
Perhaps too brightly. I followed Erebon and Murkar to begin my incarceration.
That was close, Atrika hissed.
My cell was small, and there was a bunk, not exactly luxurious, but not uncomfortable either. Now, as I looked at the wall, I saw the laboratory, where the Doctor and Jamie sat on the floor, weary and despondent. Atrika's voice came again.
Let your mind float free. When you've rested,
you and the weapon will both be ready.
I felt a growing melancholy at the prospect of doing his bidding. It is the ultimate horror to be in someone else's power like that.
Erebon came in shortly with some food on a plate. It was a green substance that looked a little like pea soup, but when I tasted it, it was far too salty for me. I was no longer very hungry, really, and I put the plate down. Then I concentrated on the sounds of the ship's engines resonating through the hull. This provided a welcome distraction for a moment, until the image of the laboratory forced itself brightly on the air, and I saw the face of true horror. Daleks! The Daleks I'd seen earlier now burst through a door and entered the laboratory, unannounced.
"Oh, no," I heard the doctor say. He stood up shakily. "Oh, dear, no, not you again."
Even Atrakar was taken aback. The Xantha soldiers were set on edge. Jamie, brave Jamie, trembled but said nothing. There were three Daleks. The first one spoke, its lights flashing.
"Exterminate the doctor. You are an enemy of the Daleks. Exterminate! Exterminate!
Exterminate!
Exterminate!"
Was on his feet now. "Wait just a moment," he said. "You want the mind projector, don't you?"
"That is correct,"
the doctor replied. "It's jolly well no use without a first-class mind such as mine to go with it." The Dalek raised its eye stalk, then its gun, then it glided forward.
"Analysis confirms. Your mind will serve the Daleks,"
another Dalek spoke.
"Your mind is acceptable."
The doctor was outraged. "Acceptable?
The Daleks are superior. We will test the projector. We will observe its effects on your consciousness."
Atrakar seemed confused by this confrontation. He spoke to the Daleks. "You are not supposed to come here. If people know you're here, our plans will be discovered."
"You will not be insolent. Insolence invites extermination."
"By all means," the doctor joined in. "Exterminate him if you can't help yourselves, but you will find nobody else capable of programming the mind projector." "He's right," Atrakar sounded defensive, almost conciliatory, as though he'd just had the fright of his life. "Don't forget, you need me too," the doctor said.
"Elaborate."
"My word. Didn't they teach you anything in universal domination school? I thought you were intelligent." "Oh, yes, with a remarkable mind like mine, the power of the projector will be magnified 1,000-fold. "Doctor," Jamie said, "don't be giving them ideas." "Not now, Jamie," the doctor told him. "I know what I'm doing."
"Elaborate."
"I heard you the first time," the doctor replied, "but you obviously didn't hear me. Atrakar is the only one who can operate the device to ensure that the outcome you want is the outcome you get. Tricky things, mind projectors. And my mind is the best candidate. You need both of us alive. Which is fortunate in a way, as I will absolutely not cooperate if you harm either Jamie or Zoe."
"Extrapolation confirms. With this projector and the Doctor's mind, the Daleks will conquer all of time and space."
"That's the spirit," the Doctor said. "But what will you do with all of time and space once you've conquered it? There's nothing left after that, you know. Well, not a lot."
"The Daleks are supreme. We will destroy, destroy, destroy."
The Doctor turned to Atrakar. "Look. See what you've allied yourself to? Time to get new friends, I'd say."
You will be silent. Atrica will place your mind inside the projector. We will observe.
If I were as smart as you, Atrica, the doctor smiled sadly, I would have concluded by now that these new partners of yours have no intention of sharing the galaxy with you or anyone else.
No, Atrica was unwilling to hear the truth. The Daleks and I have an agreement.
I dare say you have, the doctor said. It goes something like this. You will obey, then you will die.
We have an agreement, Atrica repeated, but he was nervous. The Xantha soldiers looked increasingly trigger-happy.
You will test the projector on the doctor's mind. You will order the girl to carry out her mission. We must be certain that this device will succeed.
Atrica took out a hypo-syringe. Two of the soldiers grabbed the doctor and held him.
You must understand, the doctor pleaded. They will kill you and everyone on this asteroid. Then they will burn your planet. Then they will destroy the Xantha worlds. Then they will really get started. And it won't even be tea time.
Silence him! Silence him! Silence him!
Atrica injected the receptor chip into the doctor, who collapsed into unconsciousness. The two soldiers lay him down on the table next to mine. Then, Atrica's voice struck me like atonal music. It is time, Zoe. It is time to assassinate President Fendel. Moments later, the doctor appeared in my cell out of thin air, looking very confused.
Doctor, is it you?
Well, it feels like me, he mused. Or one of me.
Are you all right? It is you, I said.
It's my mind, anyway. I must be out of my body.
Kill him,
Atrikar's voice commanded. I found myself lunging for the doctor, but he grabbed my wrists and held me back.
I heard that, Atrikar, the doctor said. You cannot control my mind.
Sorry to disappoint you.
And while I'm here, Zoe, you're not going to be doing as he says. Do you understand me, Atrica?
The doctor took out a long, thin cylindrical device and aimed it at the door. This was his sonic screwdriver. It gave out a brief, intense signal and the cell door opened.
Let's get out of here, the doctor said.
Ah, you've done my work for me. Atrica sounded pleased. The weapon is ready.
Run, Zoe, run!
I found myself pulling away from the doctor. Atrica controlled me now.
Doctor, help me! I cried. I am fighting his power, Zoe, the doctor said. I can try to project a mental shield to protect you too, but you must stay close.
The doctor cannot help you, Atrica assured me. Nobody can help you.
We'll see about that, Atrica.
The doctor aimed the sonic screwdriver at the cell door to close it again, but before he succeeded, Atrica made me rush towards the door, knocking the doctor out of my way with a force I had never suspected in myself. The door slammed shut behind me. I saw there were three locks on it. Under Atrica's influence, I closed all three. The doctor was trapped inside, at least for now. I ran, but I didn't know where I was going. I did not see Erebon or any other guard. All I could hear was the thunderous beating of my own mortal heart and the voice of Atrica ringing in my ears.
You are a genius, Zoe, but you are only human, and humans are easy to control.
Oh, yes, I've met your kind before, even if President Fendel has not.
Then you will know that I would rather die than do what you ask. I kept running.
I'm sure you would. As his words faded in the air, I stopped running and saw that I was outside a door, behind which I heard voices, perhaps a crowd.
Do you hear that, Zoe?
Atrica asked. That is the sound of a future that will never happen. You will shortly enter that room, and when you do, I will say the code word, which will place the weapon in your hand. You will aim it at the president. You will fire.
The weapon will then separate the president's mind from her body.
Stop imprinting me!
I tried to struggle against his words, but he sensed my fear. Under Atricar's control, I opened the door and entered a gallery high above a conference chamber. Below, voices rose in acclamation as President Vendel took the podium. About 50 Tabari, presumably members of the diplomatic corps, and several military leaders waited for her to speak. "You can hear them, but they cannot hear you," Atricar gloated. "Neither can they see you. I have just now set the projector to screen you from them. Your mission begins, and the president will never know what hit her." Ram Vendel was speaking now. "The war has cost both sides much. It is time it ended. We must do this with dignity, honesty, and integrity. I have outlined a series of concessions you're authorized to present to the Xantha at Livonia, in exchange for concessions of their own, which I have also outlined. Compromise, ladies and gentlemen, but with honor." I was ever more impressed by her, and I had to kill her. I was the one who would wreck this peace. I would hand power to the Daleks. The full horror of it had little time to register before I heard Atricar say, "Exterminate!" It was the code word. The Daleks' word. My right hand stiffened and my fingers opened. A weapon materialized on my palm. It was shaped like a pistol, but was entirely transparent. This was the creation of the mind projector, an analogue of the Dalek crystal, with a trigger, which my trembling fingers brushed. "Now, Zoe," Atricar whispered, "it is time to create the future." My fingers closed over the crystal. I raised it, looked down and aimed at the president. I struggled, trying to keep from pulling the trigger. I told myself that something would happen to stop me. Something would turn up, even now. But how could it? I was alone in the gallery with no one to help me. "I said now!" Atricar shouted. Then a hand gripped my wrist and dragged me away from the balcony's edge. "No!" Atricar's voice resonated round the chamber, but only I could hear it. Only I and... the doctor! I laughed through my pain as he pried my fingers open, lifted the crystal and gently closed my empty hand. "It's all right, Zoe," the doctor reassured me. "It's all right." I was never happier to hear any sound ever in the world. Below, President Vendel continued her address. "Zoe is no longer your instrument, Atricar," the doctor called out to our tormentor. "Let the Daleks do with you what they will. I still have Jamie. If you want to see him alive, you will kill Vendel." "Atricar," the doctor insisted, "you have failed. You must know that the word of a Dalek is nothing. Join us and fight them." There was a tiny moment of silence from Atricar. "Doctor," he said, "it's too late. I've just been forced to inject the Dalek creatures with receptor chips. They're going in after you."
"Exterminate!"
They were behind us. We turned to see three of them advancing.
"You will exterminate President Vendel. We will test the mind projector."
"Why don't you just kill us?" I asked the Daleks. "Why not just exterminate our bodies back in the laboratory?" The doctor answered, "They need us for this. Besides, I counted three of them in the laboratory, Zoe." I realized what he meant. "So their minds are now here, and their bodies are useless without them."
"Exactly, Zoe," the doctor said.
"Atricar, now's your chance to be free of the Daleks. We'll worry about your megalomania later." Atricar responded, "You are almost right, Zoe, but not quite. Their bodies are not useless. They have programmed their weapons to exterminate me at the first sign of betrayal. Daleks are clever like that. Their avatars can also destroy yours and your minds with them. So I would be careful if I were you."
"Exterminate the president?"
"Never," I said. "Besides, the doctor has the crystal now, and he's not likely to give it to me. You never know what I might do with it."
"Then you will be exterminated."
"Why don't you kill the president yourselves?" the doctor asked the Daleks.
We are capable of doing so, but we must prove that the crystal works. It is part of the mind projector. This will be a demonstration of its power before we use it to conquer the galaxy.
Atricar, the Doctor demanded, do something.
Atricar is irrelevant. He has failed us. We will destroy the Tibari homeworld and the Xantha planets. The Daleks are supreme.
The Doctor saw his moment. Atricar, did you hear that? You're irrelevant. Another achievement to add to your curriculum vitae.
You will obey. You will test the mind projector, or you will also be irrelevant.
Everyone is irrelevant to someone, the Doctor said. Then he addressed the laboratory. Oh, Atricar, don't you see? The Daleks have devastated 1,000 worlds. What's one more? Yours will be next. Atricar did not reply. Perhaps he was in shock. The first Dalek spoke.
Exterminate the Xantha!
I heard the horrendous blast of Dalek weapons back in the laboratory. They've killed them! They've killed the Xantha guards! Atricar cried out in dismay.
That was to prove to you that our weapons still operate, though our minds are elsewhere. Atricar is now a prisoner of the Daleks.
We had an agreement. Atricar was furious at this betrayal. Oh, Doctor, you were right. I was a fool. The Daleks had no intention of keeping their side of the bargain. What have I done? No time for self-pity, the Doctor said. You must help us, Atricar, and perhaps together we can stop them. Down below, President Vendel was leaving and the delegates were dispersing, none of them any the wiser about the drama unfolding above their heads.
Exterminate the President! You will obey!
Atricar, the Doctor said. Alert the others. Get a message out to the two fleets. Tell them the Daleks are here. They'll destroy your world. Expose this conspiracy and save your people. There was no response from Atricar at first. Only the sound of the Daleks in the lab screeching.
Exterminate!
Now they literally are mindless killing machines, the Doctor remarked. Then there was a weak, beaten voice. This is Professor Atricar to the Tibari commander. Tell the Xantha, there's a conspiracy to kill President Vendel. The asteroid has been infiltrated by Daleks. Fix on my signal. Send reinforcements. Atricar, the Doctor called. The only reply was silence. After a moment, a Dalek spoke.
Atricar was a traitor to the Daleks. He has been exterminated.
Without Atricar to help us, we were stuck here, and the situation looked hopeless.
You are no longer useful. We will test the projector in another way. Exterminate!
Oh, Doctor, they're going to kill us, I cried.
Exterminate! 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 Exterminate!
Oh! The Doctor seemed to panic. Oh, no! But they can't! Then, quite suddenly, a solid black shadow punched through the air and wrapped itself around the Daleks. We watched, stunned, as it seeped into them like an oil slick in reverse.
Exterminate!
The Daleks stopped in mid-battle cry. They just stopped! Their guns drooped, their eye stalks were still. Their robot arms twitched. What's going on? I asked. Something's happened to the Daleks. I don't know what, the Doctor said. And if it happens to us, we may never get out of this mind state. Oh, no! We may be trapped outside our own bodies forever. Without warning, the lead Dalek came to life again. Its eye stalk slid up just once. The Doctor and I retreated. This Dalek spoke.
There has been enough extermination.
That's rather deviant coming from a Dalek, the Doctor said.
It is Atricar. I injected a receptor chip into myself before the Daleks exterminated my body. The mind projector transmitted my consciousness here, and now it is occupying the minds of these three Daleks. I told you my people had psi powers.
But without your body, I said, your mind won't last more than a few minutes.
Long enough to save you. Tell Jamie that there is a button marked Extricate on a panel beside the mind projector. Press this button and it will reunite your minds with your bodies.
Jamie, the doctor said.
Not yet. First, you must help me deal with these Daleks. I am suppressing their minds, but I don't know how long I can keep it up.
What must we do? I asked.
I must atone for my treachery.
We know that, the doctor said.
Doctor, I see such terrible things. The horrors of the Dalek mind. The hate. The frozen anger. The pure, naked terror. They fear everything that is not Dalek. That is why they destroy it. That is why they kill. I am amplifying the Daleks' brainwaves now. Feeding their deepest fears back upon themselves.
Unexpectedly, the second Dalek spoke.
My consciousness is impaired. I cannot think.
Then Atrakar said,
look at yourselves. See what you fear. Feel it. Each and every death, every stab of pain you have inflicted, the worlds you have ruined, the lives you have destroyed, the species you have ravaged. I see it all. I hear every dying cry of everyone you've ever killed. I turn it back upon your minds. A dagger of remorse, a psychic wave of anguish.
The other Daleks could not face the agony that Atrakar was now dredging up inside their evil minds. They fought against him, their voices spiraling out in a cacophony of denial, a pandemonium that chilled me and made even the Doctor step back in genuine horror.
Desist! Desist!
The terror is too great! I am a Dalek! I do not accept this pain! I do not tolerate this fear! Genocide! Suffering! Why are you doing this to me? Who are you? Answer!
Atrakar's grip had begun to weaken now. The Dalek minds, temporarily disabled, were reasserting themselves. We would have to do something soon, but what?
Now, Doctor, hurry! While I still have them under control, you must use the crystal on them. Pull the trigger. It will destroy their minds and render their real bodies inoperative.
But your consciousness will die, the Doctor said.
It is too late for me.
Halt! You must not destroy me! We will retake control of our minds.
Doctor! Exterminate us!
The Doctor raised the crystal.
Exterminate the Daleks!
The second Dalek now had its weapon aimed at the first Dalek. But the Doctor trained the crystal on them all. No, the Doctor said, lowering the weapon. I will not exterminate the Daleks. I will not use their own psychic crystal against them. The Daleks glided back, raising their eye stalks in surprise. I will not exterminate the Daleks, the Doctor repeated. But Doctor, I said, if you don't destroy them, their minds will break free. We won't escape. We have no right to kill, Zoe, the Doctor said. Not even Daleks. Doctor, we have to, I cried. In desperation, I grabbed the crystal from him and aimed it. Zoe, no, the Doctor insisted. We will be no better than the Daleks.
I am no better than the Daleks. I will do it.
It was Atrakar, asserting himself in one last burst of psychic control.
He fired on the other Daleks.
Exterminate! Exterminate!
Tell my people about the Daleks. Ask them to forgive me. Goodbye, Doctor. Goodbye, Zoe.
And he set off an implosion inside his own casing. Then there was silence.
He was still a maniac, I said.
Quite, the doctor replied. But sometimes even a maniac has his moment.
All right, I said. Atrakar is gone. They can probably hear us down below now. We don't have much time, so let's get ourselves out of here.
My thoughts exactly. Jamie, the doctor called.
Are you there? Did you hear all that?
There was a loud crashing sound, and a door fell away, and a troop of Tibari soldiers rushed in, shouting and aiming their guns at us.
Jamie, the doctor said, extricate!
And as we dematerialized, I could see the Dalek bodies disappearing too, their avatars deactivated, leaving only the Tibari soldiers, confounded by what appeared to be phantoms, vanishing into thin air. I opened my eyes. I was back in my real body, lying on the table in the laboratory. Some feet away, the doctor and Jamie inspected the dead casings of the three Daleks. I rushed over to them.
It's done, I said. We're safe.
Oh, Zoe, I'm so relieved, the doctor smiled at me. Jamie here brought us back to reality.
That I did.
Jamie was proud. Atrakar's body lay on the ground, along with the exterminated Xantha soldiers. What about the Daleks? I asked. Not feeling very sociable, the doctor said. Their minds are destroyed. They won't be troubling us for a long, long time. Not these ones. That's what you said last time, I reminded him. No, the doctor replied. The last time I said they had met their final end. I was wrong then, but I dare say that this time, I'm right. Then the video screen on the communication panel activated, and a familiar face appeared. President Vendel, I presume. I am the doctor, and I have some important news. What Atrakar said in his message is true. He conspired with the Daleks, but when he saw the real threat they pose, he turned against them in order to save you all. You must now ensure that the peace conference is a success. You and the Xantha must become allies. The Daleks are out there and you need to be ready. I hear you, Doctor. And you are right. Unpalatable as it will be for many of us, President Vendel agreed. Today I met a young woman who gave me hope for the future. She was the one who first told me that the Tibari and the Xantha had a greater enemy than each other. I felt a small, psychic link to her, and got a good feeling, a glimpse of the truth. Now I fully understand what she meant. President Vendel looked at me as though she really did know who I was, but wasn't telling. Atrakar had said that the Tibari had latent psi powers. Perhaps the President's were not so latent. Could it be that she knew of my predicament, but didn't hold it against me? At this thought, I felt elated. Now, good day to you, Doctor. And to you, Zoe. The doctor smiled at this as the screen went blank. There's just one thing left to do. He rummaged in his pocket and took out his sonic screwdriver. Quick as a flash, he aimed it at the mind projector. The orb of the projector shattered into a million tiny pieces, as though it were a wine glass destroyed by a note of opera. There, the doctor was satisfied. That shan't be troubling us again either. Now, come along, Jamie and Zoe. It's high time we were going. And that's it.
Oh, our time is up. But, Counselor, could this be real? Or is it symbolic of something else?
I still don't know what's blocking my memories. I will tell you one thing, though. It was interesting being young again. Computer record. Zoe Herriot, Dream Diary. Entry number 342. No bad dreams again last night. Well, that's 8 nights in a row. In light of this, there's something I should note. As I was leaving the counsellor's office last week, I heard a voice. Zoe, it said, no more dreams. You no longer have to fear the Daleks. They really have met their final end. It was the doctor's voice, I'm sure of it. Still, how he could have known about my dream and how he spoke to my mind like that, I have no idea. You no longer have to fear the Daleks. But then, he would say that, wouldn't he?